In this episode, you'll discover these three things. Number one, how to build an engaged team and some insider tactics for getting some serious core values buy-in. Number two, why fear of missing out, also known as FOMO, at the launch of a business can hinder progression by chasing too many avenues instead of really picking a lane and focusing on the few, not the many, which sounds counterintuitive. And number three, why we can never take a job for granted, even if we've been with a huge corporate multi-billion dollar business for over 2.5 decades. So stay tuned for all of that and much, much more on this week's episode of The Truth About Business. I'm Benjamin Brain, and by day I'm a director of a multi-award winning family-run business. And by night, I interview successful business owners to share their journeys, experiences, and truths to serve as inspiration, motivation, and first-hand education for like-minded entrepreneurs and wantrepreneurs to fast-track our own business success. This is the truth about business told by those who have been there, done that, and have the scars to prove it. From the good times to the bad, the marketing strategies and sales tactics to the productivity hacks and success habits, I'm here to give you the de-sugar-coated version of what it's really like and what really works. If you're thinking of starting a business or are already in business, I created this for you. So let's get started. Before we do, if you haven't left a rating for the show on iTunes, please do. It makes a massive difference and helps me to continue to create this podcast and spread my mission to more people. And wherever you're listening right now, providing it's safe to do so, take a shot and tag me in on Instagram at truthaboutbusiness, and I'll pick one to shout out on the next episode. In this episode, I talk business with Andrew Deaton. Andrew is the owner of AWD Development Solutions, which specializes in improving focus, productivity, and capability by helping to build exceptional teams and develop exceptional team members and leaders. Now, after an accomplished and impressive 26-year career at Rolls-Royce, which included a 4-year stint in Singapore and delivering an HR service to over 2,000 people across 34 global locations, Andrew's position was unexpectedly made redundant and he was faced with two choices: either take up another position within the company or use his expertise and skill sets and his passion to set up in business for himself. He chose the latter and not only went on to build a successful business, but has also become a published author in the process. And in this brilliant interview, we get into it all. To find out more about Andrew and his services, you can visit his website at www.awddevelopmentsolutions.com, or you can find him on LinkedIn under Andrew Deaton, spelt D-E-I-G-H-T-O-N. You know, success leaves footprints. So let's take a walk with the published author and team building expert, Andrew Deaton. Andrew, thank you for joining us on The Truth About Business today. My first question for you, can you tell us what you specialise in?
I particularly specialise in helping businesses and organisations to focus on building exceptional teams and developing high-performing team members and high-performing team leaders.
And what can a business expect to see as a summary of having those things in place?
I think there are a number of things. There's first of all, getting some increased engagement and increased ownership from their employees. I think there's getting better retention of team members. And also that all results in better performance in terms of cost, in terms of quality, and in terms of delivery.
Now, obviously, your business covers a whole variety of topics, and employee engagement is something that we hear about a lot now. There's going to be lots of answers to this, but if you could pick one thing about your speciality with regards to engaging teams and engaging leaders that people should know but you tend to find don't, what would it be?
I'd say it's about retention. People sometimes don't recognise the cost of having to replace employees, team members and so on. There's been some research that shows round about a third of the salary, that's generally the cost to replace someone. So the average UK salary is about £30,000, £10,000 to replace every person that leaves on average. And that doesn't include things like management time, lost productivity, training cost, training time for people to get up to speed to actually do the job effectively. So there's a lot more indirect cost as well as that direct cost. So I think you can save a lot of money by keeping your employees engaged and retaining them.
So is that something that you tend to find from working with your clients, is that there is a lot of emphasis on finding good people and bringing them on board, but then once they're there, there's not perhaps the same focus on retaining them?
Yeah, I think people do focus more on, let's just get people through the door, and then once they're in, just sort of working them and maybe not really thinking about either their development, how to get the best out of them, how to get them to use skills maybe that they use outside work that they've actually almost leave at the door. You know, people do all sorts of stuff outside work with all sorts of skills that they don't bring to work. So it's trying to get that effective performance out of them.
And from the clients that you've worked with, can you think of one in particular where you having gone in there and really helped them to engage with their team has made a big difference?
Yeah, I think there's one I'm working with at the moment actually, and it's a small business in Leicester. And the owner of the business now was an employee, and she bought out her boss. And she's got a co-director who lives in Ireland, who comes over 10 days a month. She's never managed a business before. She's never led any people before. Her employees, who used to be her colleagues, are a little bit unhappy that she's now their boss. So it was kind of like working with a startup, but on an existing business. It's a nice job. Yeah, that's a really nice job.
And is there anybody that you can think of, either one of the big companies that we all know really well or one of the clients that you've been working with, that does do this team engagement really well?
I think it's that. I think it's that organisation, actually, because they get it. They really value the improvement that they're getting now, and they recognise that they are investing in that development of that team.
And what are some of the things that they do to encourage that?
Well, we work one-to-one, so I'll work one-to-one coaching with the owner to help her with her leadership stuff. I'll work with the two directors together, thinking about the vision and the strategy and the values. I think they're a very values-driven business, but they maybe didn't realise that before. So the way that they're set up, their own personal integrity and approach to the business is very values-driven. And then the team have never had any development before. So they actually were the first team session I ran, they were all very, very nervous that I was going to get them to do trust exercises and icebreakers and embarrass them, really. But of course, we don't do anything like that. So once we reassured them, they had a really great session and they wanted more.
So you've mentioned there some of the exercises, Andrew, that I think we all dread, the traditional team building and team engagement building exercises. From your experience, do you see businesses that are trying to get staff engagement right but go about it in the wrong way?
Where people maybe go wrong is they think it's kind of a one-off event. You can solve everything with your team by just having an away day or going off and doing some sort of outdoor team building type activity. Whereas I think you really need to build it up over time and get that momentum and get that engagement. And it's not just about that one-off course or that one-off event. It's about really thinking about the longer term and making these small improvements and trying stuff in between sessions.
And when you're talking to these business owners, do you tend to find that, especially with the increased awareness of team engagement now, that they do value it as an important part of the business? Or do you find that a lot of people are still relatively, not necessarily ignorant, but don't appreciate the full value that it brings to the business?
I think they talk it, but very often you'll find that the training budget is the first thing to go. So when times get tough, which they do, obviously, at time to time, we'll stop training. We'll stop spending money on developing people and training, which I think is kind of the last thing you should be doing.
So taking all of that into consideration, if you could summarise with one action for the listeners to do after listening to this episode today, what would it be?
Pick one thing that really resonates with you from what we talk about. And there'll not be one specific action for everyone. There'll be different things that people will find useful. But really just pick one and do something about it. Don't try and do too much. Do one thing, finish it, implement it, then move on to something else.
And what are some of the more, for the people that are interested in engaging their teams more, what are some of the exercises or strategies or tactics that they can implement? Maybe, you know, a couple of examples just so people have got some sort of idea.
One of the key ones is around understanding the real purpose of that team, what that team is there to deliver, what are the challenges it's there to meet, and then really making that personal to the individual team members. So they'll all be motivated by different reasons. They'll all want to be part of that team for different reasons. So help them find that personal drive, that personal motivation for being part of it. So there'll be a probably a vision statement, which will be the typical vision statement type of wording. But what does that really mean to me as an individual in that team? Make it personal so that people really engage with it.
So you've talked about vision and values there. Now, I think particularly with values, people can see it as business fluff rather than stuff that actually makes a difference. So you tend to find that the general consensus for people in businesses where they're not doing it right, company values are just nice words that are stuck up in the head office. But if you were to ask anybody else in the organisation, what do they mean or how do they live them? Nobody has a clue. What's your experience of businesses getting company values right and how do they implement them properly?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually. I think it can be wallpaper. People think, oh, we must have a vision statement. We've got to have a set of values and stick them on the website, put them up on the wall and that's it. It's done. But it's worthless from an internal perspective with your employees if you don't get people to really live them. And so I've done a few sessions with organisations where we've taken those values and got the team to say, right, what are the behaviours that we will demonstrate that show we are living the values? So if one of our values is integrity or one of our values is teamwork, if I walked into your business, how would I know that you are acting in a teamwork way, in an integrity way? And that might vary between different parts of the business as well. I did some work with a manufacturing business that had different sites and ran sessions at each site, and they came up with their own different behaviours. They were all consistent values across the organisation, but it meant different things to different cultures.
Okay, so that's an interesting point. So one thing that I've picked up on there is that the organisation may have defined the values or even worked with the employees to define the values, but instead of the head honchos coming up with these are the actions that we expect you to work in line with, actually, it's the team that are defining the actions, which means they then take ownership of them as well, I presume. So do you find that you get an added level of engagement and buy-in when it is the team deciding on those actions?
Yeah, absolutely. So they will say, we will act, we will behave in this way. And then they put those up, they can challenge each other. People will start to question and say, well, you're not acting in the way that we all agreed. So you do get that real commitment and alignment with the values. Yeah, absolutely.
And having that vision, so everybody knowing where the company is heading towards and buying into it and having the values working well, is that a big part of having an engaged team? That's a part of what you do and work with your organisations?
I think that's kind of the fundamental starting point. You get people behind that vision, but make it, as we said earlier, really make it personal. If we achieve that vision or we move towards that vision, what will be the impact on me? What's the benefit to me in the areas that are important to me? And that will be very different to different people. But if you can get them to think in that way with the common vision, it really does increase that engagement and that buy-in.
Yeah, and I think that may be one of the reasons why a lot of businesses perhaps don't invest in this aspect of business as much as they should, because like you say, it's creating the vision so everybody knows where they're heading towards, but then rewarding each person who's a part of that on an individual basis takes the actual time to get out there and speak to them and find out what motivates them, find out about what's important to them. But from your experiences and obviously what you teach, it's well worth putting that time investment in.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely worth investing in that sort of stuff, yeah.
Can you give us a bit of a summary of your career leading up to AWD development, starting from first job right up to the point of launching?
Yeah, so before I started the business, I worked at Rolls-Royce for 26 years. So I started as an undergraduate trainee and worked through. So I was an engineer originally. They sponsored me through my degree. So I worked in a design role on the aerospace engines in Derby for about 5 years before I then moved into a technical training role where I was managing the university links for engineering training for the professional engineers in the business. And then I moved more and more out of engineering and into sort of HR, into training roles. So I was an HR manager for a new facility that was being built. I then moved into the marine business in an employee development role. Spent some time overseas as an HR director for 4 years in Singapore.
And moving from engineering into the HR role, was that something that Rolls-Royce actively encouraged you to do, or was that something that you felt more drawn towards?
It was kind of an opportunity. So I'd got a little bit bored of sitting behind a computer doing design work. and an opportunity to came up where they wanted someone to run the technical training programs who had an engineering background so they could liaise with university professors and so on. But then I moved into that role and I saw it as almost a low risk option. It was a halfway house, but I never went back into engineering. And then after Singapore, I came back and ran the early career team, which was probably the best job. It was really future focused, really positive, looking after all the recruitment and development of graduates and apprentices, and then moved from there into setting up my business.
And was there a trigger moment when you realised that it was time for you to set up on your own?
Yeah, the early career role was made redundant, basically. So there was a reorganisation and that role became redundant, which is obviously quite a trigger. There were a couple of jobs that I was interested in, but I actually thought if, and who knows if I'd have got one of them, but if I'd been offered one, I'd have had to take it or I would have lost the redundancy option. So I thought, actually, I'm going to give it a go, because if I don't try it, I'll look back and think that was my opportunity to try something on my own.
Would you have considered yourself in your younger years as a business owner? Was that something that was always in the back of your mind, or was it more the opportunity that this situation presented?
It was the opportunity. I thought I had a job for life at Rolls-Royce. I thought I had a job for life as an engineer. Then I moved into HR, but I never thought that I would set up my own business.
And casting your mind back to your younger days, Andrew, did you show any entrepreneurial traits back in your childhood or teenage years?
I think I've always been creative and kind of self-motivated and driven, and trying to find and take opportunities, I think, when they're there or create them if they're not there, and like solving problems and generating ideas. So I think if those are entrepreneurial traits, then yes, but maybe I didn't know that they were entrepreneurial traits. But I think those things are quite important in people setting up businesses.
And where do you think that drive came from? What, is there any family history of business owners?
No, there isn't at all. No, both my parents worked in the health service. So there's absolutely no history of people setting up businesses at all in the family. You know,
what was it that held you back from becoming an entrepreneur earlier in your career?
Comfort zone, I think. So as I say, I was at Rolls-Royce. I was there a long time. I enjoyed it. I had a good salary, great benefits and pensions, and the culture was good, and I'd been treated well. They paid for a lot of personal development for me, and so I actually didn't have that real need. You know, I progressed my career well, so I didn't have that trigger to do it until the reorganisation and the redundancy came up.
In those earlier days, when you were in the process of setting it up, how did you know that there was a market for the service that you wanted to offer?
I'd seen other people doing it, so I'd seen people who'd left the business through redundancy, who did similar things to I did, who'd gone and set up and were making a success of it. So I thought, well, if they can do it, so can I. And also I'd used people who do the sort of things I do when I was at Rolls-Royce. So on development programmes, I'd brought external people in to run them, to design them, to help on them and so on. So I thought, actually, there's definitely a market there. But particularly, I wanted to start to work with smaller businesses.
How did you find your first paying client once you'd actually set up as AWD?
It was a look, really. I'd registered my details on a website that doesn't exist anymore, Manufacturing Advisory Service website, because I just joined lots of things to try and publicise my details. And it was a Friday afternoon, and I got a phone call from a bigger consultancy who said, we've got this potential opportunity. Would you be interested in talking to us and the client about it? And it went from there. It was purely, I asked them how they'd found me, and they just said, we just searched this website.
From that point on then, how did you manage to market yourself and the business, and what were some of your most successful tactics? Was it word of mouth, or was it online, or where did you go?
It's mainly been through word of mouth and referrals. I do try and use LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn is my most effective social media. So I do try to use LinkedIn to put posts up fairly regularly and comment on other people's and so on. But really, it's kind of trying to build up that referral side of things rather than, in a sense, cold calling.
And you've said that you'd seen some of your colleagues previously go off to start businesses of a similar ilk and be successful from it. Did you consciously try to differentiate yourself from the competition, or how did you win business from a client if there may have been another business similar to yourself pitching for the business?
I think it's very much how you get on from a personal level with the potential client at a kind of a relationship level. I think people talk about unique selling points, and I think it's very difficult to come up with a list of what are your unique selling points. We, in a sense, we're all our own unique selling point. Our mix of experience and skills are what makes us unique in terms of how we can go and work with businesses. So I think it very much comes down to when you first meet them, the potential client, how that relationship works.
And did you find that your previous experience within all of those roles, within Rolls-Royce and rising to a senior level, helped to generate more trust with new clients when you were out there?
I think it brings a bit of credibility in terms of having worked for a blue chip organisation. But I think you've also got to be very pragmatic. You can't go to a small, medium-sized business necessarily and say, well, at Rolls-Royce, they did it like this, which is maybe best practice, but they haven't got the same budgets and so on. So what I enjoy is that creativity of saying, OK, how can we apply what big companies would have done in your context? That's what I really enjoy about it. It's taking something into the context of a small business.
So there's not a one-size-fits-all solution?
I don't want to be in that sort of one-size-fits-all area. I like the aspects of going in and solving that specific issue that they've got.
Was there a challenge or an obstacle in particular that you can remember that really stands out?
There were two for me. I think the first one was because at Rolls-Royce, all my roles were internally focused, so I had no external network at all. I never had to go networking. So I came out of Rolls-Royce from kind of a senior position and became a nobody. And you think, well, I don't know anybody in kind of the outside world. So literally starting from nothing was quite tough.
How did you manage to overcome that? You've mentioned networking there. Was that a part of the marketing process?
Yeah, networking, that's really the key thing at the moment. I think it's just trying to get out and meet some people across the business community. And obviously Derby it's a relatively small business community. So you do tend to meet the same people at the events that you go to. So you start to build up those links. People start to get to know what you do. So yeah, networking is really important, but it's something that I still struggle with, to be honest. It's not my favourite thing to do, but you have to do it.
And if you could go back to day one of launching and do one thing differently, what would it be?
I would focus earlier on teams. So one of the areas I work in and focus on is team development. I do a lot of other stuff. I do change management and leadership and talent management, but a lot of that is, unless people have worked in a bigger organisation, it's a bit too jargony. So I would have focused on the team stuff earlier, and I reckon it took me about 3 years to get that. I had this sort of fear of missing out. If I don't say everything I can do, I might miss out on an opportunity, but actually it kind of works the opposite way. It's too much for people. So having that real focus around teams has got me a lot more traction. And then once I'm in somewhere, I can talk about other things that I could do.
Yeah, so it almost sounds sort of counterintuitive, doesn't it? You offer all these services and you are, especially at the beginning stages, trying to win business in each of the areas, but actually had you just sort of niched down to one in particular and focused on that, then it might have paid dividends later on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm starting to find that now because people understand what a team is.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, of course. And what does the future look like for AWD? Where are you hoping to take it?
I'd like to keep building the team side. I've developed a framework that I use that works well. So I want to try and use that framework as almost like a hook to hang lots of other things off. So a book, workshops, talks, coaching, almost like a range of different offer streams. So I'm not reliant on just one area, but the common theme is the team development framework that I've put together. So I want to grow that almost as a brand, really. I'd like to, because when you're doing a service or a consultancy type of role, having it kind of a product is quite nice. So something that you can sort of wave around or show around is quite nice. So the books, for example, but I'd like to grow that brand around that offering.
And what about personal aspirations, Andrew? Have you got any BHAGs or big goals in the pipeline that you're working towards?
I really want to build that brand I've just mentioned and have that range of business streams. But kind of my vision from a personal perspective is really around the being kind of the go-to person for team development in the Midlands. I mean, you know, you've got to be pragmatic about these things, but I think having something like that to become the person that people will think about from a team development perspective in the Midlands region would be ideal for me. That would be my personal goal.
Right. So, Andrew, we know about your speciality. We know a bit more about your journey to launching AWD. So I'd like to find out a bit more about Andrew, the entrepreneur / business owner. So could you tell us what a typical week looks like?
It varies tremendously, which is really what I like. That's what I enjoy, not having that necessarily set routine all the time. But a week will generally have fairly consistent elements. So networking, probably at least once a week, there'll be some networking event that I'll be attending.
Are there any particular networking events that you are fond of going to? Do you have any favourites?
Probably my three main things that I do at the moment are I'm a bondholder with Marketing Derby, which I think is probably the last thing I would stop. I think that's a really great community to be part of. I'm a chamber member, so I go to the chamber events and the chamber conferences and things like that. And I'm also a member of a group called Cuckoo Connect, which is a different style. It's in the evenings once a month, and it's very relaxed. There's no pitching. It's just more social, but it's all about building links and relationships. And I think those sort of it's quite important that you find the style and the approach of networking groups that work for you. You know, so there are some very, very structured groups, and there are some more informal groups, and they work for different people, and that's great, that's fine. But you find the ones that work for you, or the ones that your potential clients will go to, and the ones that you enjoy. So networking is quite a key part. If I'm not out delivering at a client, I might be putting proposals together, I'll be designing content, I might be writing, creating ideas and workshop, thinking about business development stuff, or potentially volunteering stuff as well, doing some sort of free stuff as well. So a real mix, but probably those themes are there every week to different proportions.
So tell us a bit more about the volunteering stuff that you do.
There are probably a couple of areas. So the first area, I'm a trustee of a charity in Derby called DHA, which is all about helping to alleviate poverty and prevent homelessness. So I've been a trustee there for about 3 years, which was something totally new to me. I'd never worked in the charity sector at all before, but it makes you think differently because there's no money to spend on stuff. So you have to find kind of creative ways of doing things, which I really enjoy. And then quite a lot of the other stuff is around education. I volunteer with an organisation called Inspiring the Future, where you go into schools and help with CV writing workshops, help with interview, mock interview activities, do careers talks, talk about how you came to be where you are today, things like that. I've just started with Our Future Derby, which is focused on specific areas of Derby to go in and help raise the aspirations of the children in there, and that's particularly focused at primary school because they're kind of starting to make career decisions at 5 and 6 years old. And then I do mentoring with the Derby University, Nottingham Trent University students and things like that. So yeah, quite a range of, and sometimes you think, is the balance right? You know, am I doing too much unpaid stuff and not enough paid stuff?
How do you do that? How do you work out which opportunities to say yes to?
I think it's quite difficult. You don't like saying no. I think, again, it's a little bit like the networking. You do it for a reasonable amount of time, then you look for something else, and then you might go back to it after a year or so. But and I think it helps you keep fresh as well. I think if you do too much of the same stuff, it becomes a bit too routine.
And so, do you enjoy giving back to the community as well, being able to do that with the role that you're in now?
Yeah, it is, because it all uses the skills, the facilitation or the coaching skills, and it helps you get better at it.
What does your morning routine look like? Do you have any specific habits that you follow in the morning?
I've got a home office, so if I'm working from home and not out early at a networking event or going to a client's and so on, I'll generally start 7:30, 7:45. I'll start emails. I've just fairly recently started trying to be a bit more disciplined around emails. So I'll do my emails first thing, then I'll switch them off. I'll do another little half hour or so at lunchtime, switch them off, and then do it again at just sort of 4 o'clock before the end of the day, because I think you can be so distracted by just every time something pops up, having a look. So I'm really trying to be a bit more disciplined around managing my time and how I manage my emails at the moment.
Have you noticed an increase in your own productivity from trying to implement that?
Yes, yeah, it does. It really does help. The other thing I've started to do in a similar vein is to kind of block out and work in 20-minute sessions, really focus on something for 20 minutes and have a really short break and then focus again for 20 minutes and try and really do one thing, because I get easily distracted and, oh, that looks right, let me spend a bit of time doing that, and, oh, I'll do this. So I've found that spending a really focused 20-minute blocks helps me as well.
That's a good idea. I might have to try that one myself. I've definitely tried with the email, so I started off with a similar routine to yourself, mm-hmm. and I've managed to bring it back to just checking once in the morning now. Mm. So it does make a phenomenal difference to the amount of time that you have in your day. It's crazy when you look at how distracting emails Absolutely. Are and how much time they take. So is there any particular habits or a one habit that you have that you feel has contributed to your success?
Yeah, I think for me, it's kind of having, I have a bit of a default diary. So I think about what are the really important things that I'm working on at the time. And having setting up those times for emails, setting up the time for project work and so on, or writing and whatever, and essentially put a diary together. So if I'm not with a client, I can just almost not have to think about what to do next. I've got something, 10 o'clock on a Tuesday, there's something in a diary that I can default to.
Do you prefer to have that as a paper hard copy diary, or do you use technology to keep track of that diary?
I've just kind of got a printout stuck on my wall in my office and then I can change and just rub things out and change them as projects change and ebb and flow and so on. But that just saves a little bit of the sitting there thinking, oh, what should I do now, and helps with the prioritization really. It's all about just giving that comes back to focus to me. It's about doing the important stuff that needs doing.
How do you decide what the important stuff is? Is there a particular process that you follow to define that?
If I've got a big project to do, there's a technique that a guy I know teaches it's his sort of intellectual property, and he goes around teaching it. It's called the massive goal principle. So he will teach that you set the goal that you want to achieve, business or personal, and then break it down into as many aspects that you can think of. You just dump ideas down on post-its, then you start to sort them into the flow that's needed to do it and build up kind of a pyramid picture, and so that it suddenly becomes less difficult to achieve because you've got a real great breakdown, and you can start to actually, it works for me because I can visibly see progress. I think that's quite important. I like crossing stuff off. So that really helps with the focus. So everything works towards the goal that you're trying to achieve, but it's in kind of manageable chunks. And that technique has worked really well for me.
And when you do manage to get some downtime, when you've been out on the road, you've had several clients in a day, and you just want to relax and do something that you enjoy, what's your go-to activities?
Kind of revolves mainly around family and home stuff. So I've got my two daughters who've left home now. They've both graduated and gone off and they're doing their own thing, but I've still got a son at home who does a lot of music, so I tend to be a roadie for his, carrying his guitar and amps around, taking him to music lessons and bands that he plays in and so on, and going to listen to music is probably an underpinning thing. So I like listening to the bands he plays in, but also going to gigs and listening to music at home. That's kind of an important thing to me. And then really just working on the house, you know, the stuff, DIY type stuff, and very, very occasional bad golf. is the main things really, but very much around that family stuff.
Now, we've talked about your biggest challenge during the first 12 months. What would you say during all of your time in business so far, be it from previous roles at Rolls-Royce or as AWD, what's been your biggest challenge so far?
I think from a Rolls-Royce perspective, it was moving in when I was involved in a new factory. I was the HR team leader, but I actually had no HR background at all, which was quite, it was great because the factory was a blank sheet of paper from an HR perspective. So I had no baggage. I didn't know what you could do and what you couldn't do. And that was a really great challenge, but also a great opportunity. It was probably the best 2 years in terms of personal development from all sorts of areas that I've worked in. But that was quite a challenging time. From my business perspective, I think it was probably 6 months in. I'd had a good start to the business. I'd got three projects going almost from the start. So I was kind of full time on three different projects, but two of them came to an end, the natural end that they delivered about the same time. And because I never had to do it, I not thought about what next. So suddenly I've gone from full time to nothing. And I've not thought about pipeline, and that was a real wake up, because it's so easy if you're working full time just to forget that this is going to come to an end at some point. So that was quite challenging when I realised that I hadn't got anything to do. Mm-hmm. I've got to start to try and generate some work.
What was your takeaway from that? How did you make sure that as best you could you weren't in that position again in the future?
It was really about making sure that you keep up the network inside. So I probably, when I first started out, didn't really do that because kind of I didn't have to, it just happened. But I then realised that I had to get out there and be visible. And I think, again, the sort of work I do, people don't necessarily need it now. So it's making sure that you're in their mind when they do need it. And I think people soon forget if you're not around and about, people soon forget because there are a lot of other people that they can talk to.
What would you say has been your biggest success or your proudest moment so far?
I think from a Rolls-Royce perspective, I think it was when we moved overseas. So we took the family overseas for 4 years. And from both a business perspective and also a personal and family perspective, that was a really great time. And I think from my business perspective, two really maybe stand out. For one is around getting my first retained client. So people don't generally, it's more difficult to get retained clients in development. In HR, people maybe do more so because it keeps them out of court, it keeps them legal. So it's almost like an insurance policy having a monthly arrangement, whereas in development, it isn't necessarily. And so getting that first retained client just give you a little bit of a foundation for your project peaks and troughs. So that was one. And I think then the other one was actually publishing a book. So I'd always wanted to publish something. And so I pulled together the book around the framework that I use in training and development. So it was all kind of in my head. It was a case of getting it out onto paper. So I put that book together, which is very much a workbook. I want people to write in it. It's full of questions and almost like a coaching thing that people write in. It's not a theoretical textbook type thing. It is a practical, I want people to use it.
Yeah, I think that's always the sign of a good book. When you look in somebody's library, it's one where they've got the pages folded down, there's lines, there's notes, things have been...
Yeah, writing it.
Yeah, exactly. So you've, with your... So what is the name of the book?
It's called the Exceptional Team Blueprint. And I self-published it, put it on Amazon, so it's on Amazon. Yeah, it's done all right. It's done all right so far.
Had you ever published anything before that?
No, I'm not. So, and it was just something I thought, actually, as a goal, I'd like to do something. I didn't know what I wanted to do at the time, but then I sort of came up with the framework from being part of some great teams and working for some great team leaders. I kind of pull together my sort of experiences, my professional knowledge, and kind of put a framework together. And I thought, well, actually, why don't I use that? And then I use it kind of as notes for people on courses and stuff. So instead of giving a load of notes, that will probably just go in the drawer, give them a book to use as the course notes, and it stands a bit more chance of staying on the desk maybe rather than just thrown into a drawer.
And have you found that being a published author adds to your level of credibility and the perception of your authority in that particular sector?
I think it's starting to. Yeah, I think it does take time, but it's surprising when you meet people at events who you don't know. It's like, oh, I've seen either your posts on LinkedIn, I've seen about your book and so on. So I do think it certainly helps if you've got, and I think it helps at networking events. It gives you kind of something physical to wave around and say, you know, I can use this in your business life, in your personal life, in your family life, because teams exist outside work.
Yeah, a bit more interesting than a business card.
Yeah, and I do use it as a business card. It, you know, it's kind of a higher level, more expensive business card, but I do leave it with potential clients and stuff as well.
How long did it take you to write the book?
Well, I think I'd kind of been probably messing about with it for 6 to 9 months on a very, very part-time basis. But then again, using this massive goal principle that I mentioned earlier that someone showed me, that gave me a real focus. So I probably finished it in about 4 to 5 months of, again, very part-time, but I started it towards the back end of last year, so sort of September time, and published it on the 14th of February this year.
What was your biggest challenge in writing that book?
It was just physically sitting down and working through it, I think, you know, and trying not to be distracted, going on to, oh, there's something else to do. And it's, as I said before, it's this kind of chunks of time and a real focus.
Which parts of the business do you enjoy the most? Where do you get a real buzz?
I like the variety. I like working with a lot of different clients and sizes and types of business, and taking what I do into their context so it's useful to them, not just a sheep dip type of approach in terms of, oh, you must do it this way. No, actually, let's work out the way that it works best for you. And I guess it's maybe a bit of the kind of the engineering-y stuff. I like the creative side and generating ideas and solutions to problems. Those are the key things. And the freedom from a personal perspective, not being part of a big corporate machine, you've got a lot more freedom and autonomy. I really enjoy that.
Are there any parts that you don't particularly enjoy?
Yeah, I really don't like the kind of the lead generation and the sales side. That's still a kind of a big struggle to me. It's not the bit of the business that I enjoy doing. Generally, find once I find somewhere and get through a door, it then becomes easy. But it's finding those doors that I really don't particularly enjoy that side of it.
And what do you think some of your own personal strengths are that have contributed towards your success so far?
I think that they're linked to what I enjoy doing. I think that's true in a lot of people. If you've got certain strengths, I think you enjoy them because you use them more and you get better at them, and therefore you enjoy them more. It's a kind of this virtuous circle type thing. So problem solving, creativity, generating ideas, I think are probably the ones I would pick out. Because I enjoy them, I tend to use them, therefore you get better and so on.
You obviously spend a lot of time working with all types of different business owners. You've had plenty of experience in business yourself. What do you believe are some of the fundamental beliefs or skills or attributes that you've seen people need to have to be successful in business?
I think the fundamental one to me is you've got to enjoy what you do. I think if you're in a job and you don't enjoy it, you're there a long time. And I think if you can find something that you really enjoy doing, then you'll make it a success, whether that's in an organisation or whether that's for yourself. So that's kind of the main foundation to me. But then it's that lesson I learned about focus, having a focus and being quite niched around what you do. Creating and taking opportunities, I think, is quite important in business. And then just being tenacious and keep going when things get tough. I think those are the ones that come to mind.
What's your motivation? What keeps you going when things get tough for yourself?
I enjoy what I do, and I enjoy seeing the difference that it makes to organisations. And that's why I like working with either individuals or small, medium-sized businesses, because you can see the difference that you've made that you maybe don't see if you're working with a big corporate type of organisation.
What do you think are some of the misconceptions people have who aren't in business about being a business owner? Obviously, you've talked about one of the benefits of being your own boss, which is you get more freedom compared to being in a corporate. What do you tend to find are some of the misconceptions that people have?
One that springs to mind is that you'll make a lot of money. You may or you may not. I think that's a misconception. If you've owned a business, therefore you make a lot of money. And also, I think sometimes people think it's kind of not a proper job. It's more of a hobby.
What are some of the other benefits of being a business owner, other than obviously we've talked about more freedom compared to being in the corporate world? What else have you experienced that you enjoy?
I think that's a very personal, and it will vary with what people really want. But for me, it is that freedom. It's being able to choose how you work and who you work with, having that autonomy, and that's quite important to me. Having that opportunity to meet and work with a wide variety of different people and organisations, and that chance to really focus on what you comes back to say it again, you know, what you enjoy doing. You know, I think that those are the real benefits to me. But other people will be motivated by different things.
What are some of the downsides that you found from being a business owner, if you found any?
Probably the main one for me is the peaks and troughs of income, especially if you're doing it kind of a consultancy type of role where you don't have retained clients and so on. It's those peaks and troughs of income. No holiday pay, no sick pay. There's the benefits that you get from being part of a business that you don't have. I talked about this at a school careers talk, actually. There was a group of, there's probably about 20 children in the room from year 7 to year 12, I think there were. And out of those 20, about 18 of them wanted to run their own business. We asked them at the start. And so I just sort of gave them a warts and all. These are the great bits for me, and these are the difficult bits for me. And it is around lack of consistent income.
How many of the kids had their hands up at the end?
We didn't do a review at the end. We should have, actually. We should have done that. That'd be a good idea for next time. Absolutely.
What's been the best advice you've ever received?
Whatever you do, a lot of people will either give you feedback or they'll give you advice, whether that's starting up in business or in a job that you do. But really, choose who you listen to. You don't have to agree with what you're being told, whether that's feedback or whether that's advice. And you don't have to take it on board. You've got that choice of who you listen to and how you take it on board, how you implement, if you implement it at all. But having that, thinking about, do I value the individual who's giving that advice and their knowledge of the area and their views and so on, or not? But you've always got that choice whether you wanted to accept it or not.
So we know the best advice you've received, but if you could go back to 21-year-old Andrew and you could give him just one piece of advice, what would it be?
It would come back to that enjoyment thing. Find out what you really enjoy doing and make a job out of it.
So, Andrew, we've talked about your book, The Exceptional Team Blueprint. So I'm assuming I may already know the answer to this one. But if you could recommend one business book, what would it be? And what was your takeaway from that? Free plug here.
I'm not going to. I'll do the free plug later, maybe.
Okay.
I think that the sort, because of the work I do, that one of the most useful books I've read is called Talk Like Ted by someone called Carmine Gallo, and it's based on the TED Talk kind of principles, but you can take those principles and apply them in presentations, in really any talks, workshops, all sorts of different scenarios. So it's not just about doing a TED Talk at all. There's a lot of real useful stuff in there about thinking about how you structure whether they're sales presentations or talks, things like that. And that's really where that 18-minute, 20-minute thing came from, actually. That I say I chunk my time into 20 minutes. So this book says people concentrate for 20 minutes. That's why TED Talks are no longer than 18 minutes. So I, in my workshops and things, I'll sort of chunk things into 20-minute blocks, and then there'll be a little break for people just to get them thinking about something else, and then you'll do another 20 minutes of input. And I think that's quite a useful way of thinking about all sorts of things, whether that's presenting or whether it's structuring workshops, whether it's managing your time to achieve tasks and so on. So that's quite useful. And then there's a lot of stuff in there about how you structure your information. So just having one real key headline. So almost like when Twitter used to be 140 characters, what's the message that you want to get across in 140 characters? And then break that into three key points. And each of those three key points give three supporting evidence, whether that's stats, whether it's a story, a real life example, a case study. And I use that structure a lot when I'm putting things together as well, just trying to simplify things.
And the title of that book, again, is Talk Like TED.
Talk Like TED, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for anybody that's listening, there's always the show notes that accompany these episodes, along with everything else that Andrew's talked about in this episode of The Truth About Business. So to check those out, just head over to www.benjaminbrain.co.uk/Andrew-Deaton, and all of those details will be there. Now, staying on the book topic, Andrew, if you had to write a book about your own journey in business so far, what would the title of that one be?
I think it would be Roller Coaster, getting used to those real ups and downs of running your own business.
Yeah, that's a great title. I like it. And is there anybody that you follow closely? Do you have anybody that you look to for inspiration or motivation? Any of the business entrepreneur gurus out there?
No, I don't. I tend to take different things from different people, actually. And there are people who are really good at certain things, and you'll kind of watch what they do and then try and apply some of that. I think you should never try and be someone else. You can't role play someone else. You've got to be how you are. But you can take some tips and techniques by watching them. So I actually get quite a lot out of just watching speakers, and not necessarily the message that they're giving, but how have they structured things? How do they tell the story? How do they move around the stage and things? And I get as much out of watching that side of it as the content. And so I think you can kind of pick people who are good at what you want to do and the areas that you work in. But, you know, they aren't necessarily high-profile people at all. I think it's all bosses and people you respect in your business, like at Rolls-Royce. There were some leaders there that I really respected and really enjoyed working for that you can learn so much from.
Do you have any favourite quotes that have resonated with you, particularly in the past, or any that you keep in mind and try to live by now?
One that comes to mind for me is, it's a Henry Ford one. Whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you're right. And I think it's all about that self-talk.
And if you could recommend one resource, be it an app or a software or a YouTube series or anything that you feel has helped you that you'd like to recommend to the listeners, and you could pick just one, what would it be?
I think I'll go for my own plug this time then.
Good answer.
Ben, if that's all right. The book that I've pulled together, The Exceptional Team Blueprint, is really, you can apply the principles to it in your business life, in your hobbies, or in your family life even, because we're all part of teams to some extent anywhere. And it's deliberately kind of set up so you can use it as an individual, just be a better team member yourself, whatever teams you're in, or use it as a whole team and use those principles and the framework and so on if you're an intact team working together. So, yeah, that's my chance to...
Okay, good answer. And where can we find the Exceptional Team Blueprint for anybody out there that's fancies having a good read?
It's on Amazon, so we can maybe put the link on.
Yeah, absolutely. That will be in the show notes. Yeah. Definitely that will be included there. So I've just got a couple more questions for you, Andrew, before we wrap up the interview today. If we could summarise everything that we've talked about so far, and you were sat in front of somebody who's about to start in business, and you could just provide three key principles or pointers to help them succeed or increase their chances of succeeding the most, what would you say?
I think first of all, it's about focus. It's finding that focus. As I say, it took me a long time to get that, but really find that thing you enjoy doing, and that focus would be my first one. My second one would be around choosing who you listen to. And my third one is about really put a cost and a value on your time. So whenever you're doing something, think about, is it going to move me forward? Is it going to grow my business? Is it going to be helpful for potential clients and so on? But and if not, how much is it costing me to be at this event or to be doing this activity? Because once that time's gone, you've lost it.
Yeah, three great pieces of business wisdom there, definitely spoken from experience. And my final question for today, Andrew, if the listeners would like to find out more about you or AWD, whereabouts can we find you online?
I've got a couple of websites. The more general one for AWD is awddevelopmentsolutions.com. My team development offering focus is exceptionalteamblueprint.com. I've got a Twitter account at AWD Development, and I'm on LinkedIn. So just search for my name on LinkedIn.
Okay, great. And like we've said, all of those links will be included in the show notes. Well, Andrew, that wraps up today's interview. So I've really enjoyed talking business with you. I've learned a lot myself, and there's some really good actionable insights in there. So thank you for taking the time to talk with us on this episode.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And to the listeners, thank you as always for listening. Really appreciate your support. As we've said, any resources and links mentioned can be found in those show notes at benjaminbrain.co.uk. Look forward to catching up with you on next week's episode of The Truth About Business. One final thing before you go. If you enjoyed this interview and want to make sure you don't miss out on the next episode with another real-life business champion, make sure you subscribe via iTunes, Spotify, your favourite podcast app, or by visiting my blog at benjaminbrain.co.uk and hitting subscribe. At the blog, you'll also find the show notes to this episode, which includes all the relevant links to the website, social media channels, contact details, and anything else that was discussed in the episode. Just type in the name of the guest, and that will bring that right up for you. And finally, I'm always on the search for great business owners who would be happy to spare just a couple of hours of the time to share their business experience with our audience. So if you know of anyone that would make a great guest, or you'd like to feature yourself, just let me know. Send an email to hello@benjaminbrain.co.uk and I'll reply personally as soon as possible. Also, if you've got any feedback, questions that you'd like me to ask our guests, or any other suggestions, I am definitely all ears. That email address again is hello@benjaminbrain.co.uk. So that's it for this episode. I just want to thank you sincerely for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Stay hungry, stay fearless, get out there and make it happen.